Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. All right, good morning. It's Sunday, April 26, 2009. This is Solder Smoke 106. I'm going to start out, as we always do, with a little bit of Italy travelogue, actually Sicily travelogue this time. Those of you watching the blog know that we were down in Sicily last week. I imagine Sicily is causing a lot of the Sylabin desk problems here. I'll try to get the notch filter to take those out. We had a great trip. It was really, really amazing. And it's often said that to really know Italy, you have to know Sicily. And there's some real complex reasons for that. But I think it's true. And we really enjoyed our trip to that island. The way we travel, it might be of interest to some of you guys. It's a different way of traveling than we're used to in the States. As we did with Sardinia, we went by shuttle boat, by traghetto, by ferry. But it's not quite a ferry in the sense that you usually think of it in the States. These are fairly large ships, and it's a great way to travel. You load up the car. You drive down to the port with very little, fuss or bureaucratic maneuvering. You drive right onto the ship. we have everybody grab what we call their boat bags. The kids have all packed little backpacks for the overnight stay on the ship, and then you head to what looks like a hotel registration desk on board the vessel. They give you your keys to your room, and you drop off the bags, head for the restaurant, have a little dinner, go out, watch the landscape go by as the sun goes down, and then everybody's pretty much ready to go to sleep, back to the room. Wake up in the morning as the ship is pulling in into the port, and have a little bit of breakfast before departing. It's all very pleasant. There's a whole lot less bag searching and waiting for your bags and losing bags and struggling with bags and metal detectors and all that stuff. It's a great way to travel. You get the other end, you just drive off the ship, head off to your destination, and it's really quite pleasant. We went in through the we went out of Naples on the ship and went into the port of Palermo in western Sicily. And Palermo's a very interesting town. Didn't stay there too long. Went up to a place about a few miles south of Palermo called Monreale. And it was really very nice and amazing cathedral up there. And at that point, we drove almost completely across the island to the east to the area around Catania where we were staying. And that is Mount Etna country. Mount Etna looms above you the whole time that you're in the Catania area. It's a big mountain. It's Europe's largest active volcano. It goes up to over 10,000 feet. I've got pictures of it on the blog. We went up to the 8,200 foot level. I'm not going to tell you we climbed. We we drove and then took the little cable car that'll take you up to 8,200, 8,300 feet. And I guess it's about 2,500 meters for those of you in the modern world. and it's you're definitely above the snow line at that point, and it is cold. We got up there. We got out of the cable car. We dressed the kids up as warm as we could. We hadn't anticipated snow on this trip, but We got outside and it was really cold, but bright, and you could see almost completely across the island of Sicily, which is the Mediterranean's largest island, by the way. Really, really interesting. When we were on Etna, there was lava flows on the other side. We couldn't see it. The lava flows were on the other side of the volcano. But they said that from the city of Taormina up to the northeast, you could see it at night, and that would have been interesting to see. But we weren't there during the hours of darkness. One of the amazing things I thought was, and it just shows you the diversity of terrain and weather conditions in Italy. We had the kids up on the mountain, and freezing cold in the snow. And within about 90 minutes, we were back down at sea level, and they were at 80 degrees Fahrenheit, around 23, 24 degrees C, and in the swimming pool. So quite a shift in climate. We did lots of other kind of tourism stuff. We went down to Siracusa, where Billy and I visited one of the really amazing Greek theaters that they have there. We went up to Taormina, which is a beautiful area north of Catania. And then some of you guys might find this interesting. Somebody told me that the town where they filmed The Godfather is in the Taormina area. And we looked it up and we put it in the navigator. Savoca is the name of the place. Really interesting, beautiful little town in the mountains above Taormina. You can look off to the sea, and you can see the tip of the boot of Italy. You could see the area around Reggio Calabria, and so you're looking across the historically important Straits of Messina at Italy, and very, very interesting. But up there, one of the interesting thing about that place is that's where Francis Ford Coppola, in 1972, filmed the Sicilian sequences for Godfather 1. Now, we knew we were going up there, so we rented the video the night before, and we became familiar with where everything was. For those of you who know the movie, this is the place where Michael Corleone met Apollonia, his young Sicilian wife. And the bar in which he met her father is there. It's the bar where they had the first kind of dinner when he first came to court her. And the church where they got married is also in Savoca, and we got to see all of it. We went into the Bar Vimelli and Bar Vitelli. I'm sorry, and got our pictures taken, had a cup of coffee. I've got pictures of it up on the blog if you're interested. It was a lot of fun. Really enjoyed Sicily. Beautiful place. It has, because of the organized crime connotations, it has a really negative image, but the reality is far more pleasant. People are really, really nice. The place is it's stunningly beautiful. The roads are really great, easy to get around, and we really liked it. We'll be heading back to Sicily. Really a great place. My wife has one grandparent that came from Sicily. So we've got kind of family roots there, I guess you could say. And I sometimes tell people here in Rome that the kids are part Sicilian, and that sometimes is good for a free piece of candy or or something, or a pastry or something in one of the stores. We have a great Sicilian ice cream place right here on the corner. So the Sicilian connections are useful in this neighborhood. All right, so three cheers for Sicily. Hey, now on to radio. We've had some big successes here that I want to report. A lot of fun with Whisper, the program. What is it called? Whispered. What does it stand for? My goodness, I can't remember here. A weak signal propagation reporting system. Whisper, a piece of software designed by one of the most brilliant guys in ham radio. John Taylor, K1JT, Nobel Prize winner. He's putting together many, many bits of software for a weak signal reception. Some of it is being used in meteor scatter. Some of it's being used for Earth Moon Earth Communications. Whisper is kind of a version of the software that's accessible to those of us at the not at the extreme high end of radio technology sophistication. It's actually a very easy program to use, and it's basically kind of a souped up, a more software based program for beacon transmission. I'm using it on 30 meters. It's in use in other bands. The way it works is that the Whisper program just runs on your PC and generates a message that includes your call sign, your grid square, your power level, and it generates audio tones at around 1,500 hertz. Most guys run this into their SSB transceiver and get their signal, their SSB signal, into a 200 hertz band that's used, a 200 hertz wide band on 30 meters or other bands that that is used for Whisper. Now, almost everybody is running this in transmit and receive mode. Whisper will transmit your message, and then it will switch your rig into the receive mode, and then it'll serve as kind of a software-defined radio detector, I guess similar to Argo or Spectran, to pull in the very weak signals that are coming in from other stations. It then, and this is really one of the cool parts, the signals that you receive, you can very easily opt to have uploaded to a centralized website, the Whisper propagation reporting website, where it'll be displayed for all the world to see. So at this website, you can very easily see who's transmitting, who's being received. It'll display the whole thing on a nice map. It's really an amazing bit of work. Now, I've gone at this in a very minimalist way, very minimalist. I was inspired to get into this by Gene, W3PM, who has a great website. I put it up on the blog not long ago, and it describes a very simple SSB station that can be built for kind of a minimalist approach to Whisper. I went a bit more minimalist than Gene did, and you guys know about my love for double sideband rigs, and I figured I could make Gene's rig even simpler, even easier, by eliminating two bits of the circuit. One, on the transmit side, I got rid of the filter. So I decided that I could do this with just double sideband. And I didn't build any of the receive circuitry. I guess this indicates that I am kind of that I like to hear myself talk. I've been accused of this before. I guess that's how you become a podcaster. But I wasn't interested in the receive bit. I just wanted to get my signal out. Figured other people out there had receivers. I'm being facetious here. One of these days I'm going to get around to build the receiver, because it is, I guess it's kind of the socially acceptable thing to do. You should be participating in the global receive effort also. So one of these days I'll build the receiver. For now I'm just transmitting, and I'm just transmitting double sideband. I think I am the only station in the world transmitting a double sideband Whisper signal. Now, if anybody out there has information to the contrary, let me know, because I do plan to communicate this to the relevant prize-granting authorities in Stockholm and elsewhere. Let me know. I think I'm the only DSB signal on Whisper. Also on Whisper, here's an interesting thing. I think I may also be the lowest powered station in the world, because one of the things you can see on the Whisper website, because each station specifies the power level at which they're transmitting, you can just look down the screen and see how much power the Whisper stations are using. I reported earlier that there's a bit of kind of heartburn in the kind of beacon community, 30-meter beacon community. The guys who are running visual beacons, the MEPTs, the manned experimental propagation transmitters, that we've been discussing, that you know, that project these beautiful little signal traces across the screen and that you watch in a visual way. They have the feeling that the folks who are involved in WHISPR are a lot more high power oriented, and high power, by high power I mean 5 watts. In the visual beacon community, 5 watts would be obscenely high power. They'll talk bad about you in that area. That group of guys will talk bad about you if you go to 200 milliwatts. I'm not kidding. But I noticed that in WHISPR, most of the stations are running around 5 watts. I saw one yesterday. A guy was running 100 watts on WHISPR. Dude, that's not whispering. That's shouting. But most guys running around 5 watts. I think it may be just that with the commercial rigs that most guys are using, it may be difficult to get down to the really low power levels. I don't know why. I don't have any of that kind of gear in the shack. But with my equipment, I had no problem getting to the milliwatt level, of course, because what I did was I took my 30-meter beacon MEPT QRSS transmitter, and kind of with inspiration from GNW3PM and with some parts that Jim AL7RV had sent to me, I inserted an SBL1 diode ring mixer into between the oscillator and the power amplifier of the rig. I made it switchable so that I can easily go back to the visual MEPT mode. I had to build a little one-stage RF amplifier to get the local oscillator signal up to a sufficient level, up to about 7 dBm, to drive the diodes in the diode ring SBL1 modulator, diode ring mixer. That was pretty easy. Then I thought that I might be able to get away with just running the audio out of my sound card into the audio import on the SBL1 mixer, but no dice. There was not enough audio coming out of the sound card. Gene had provided a circuit for kind of an op-amp based audio amplifier, but I admitted I got lazy, and I somehow get tired of building kind of op-amp based audio amplifiers. I don't know if you guys know what I mean, but it gets, after you've built a lot of them, you get tired of, you know, hooking the resistors up to pin 1 and pin 6 and all that. There's just not a lot of I don't know. For some reason, I don't like to build audio amplifiers that much. So, anyway, I decided to look into the junk box. And in the junk box, I found a little electronics card, the PC card, PC board, from an old computer speaker system. And obviously, I thought this thing might be of use, and I just threw it in the junk box. And sure enough, it is, because there's a complete audio amplifier in there. And I looked around and found the inputs, and found the outputs, and found the 12 volt DC in, and all that, and hooked it up. And it looked like it was producing some very clean audio amplification. So I just ran the audio out from my PC sound card to the audio input of this thing, hooked it up temporarily with a little 9-volt battery, and then ran the audio output into the AF port on the beacon transmitter. And man, it was clearly modulating, and it was taking the tones from the WHISPR software. And I looked at the output; looked pretty nice. I got the standard kind of double sideband sideways hourglass pattern there that you're looking for. Looked real good. I had to figure out where to put the carrier frequency. Because, you know, as with QRSS and MEPT, you really have to make sure that that you're in the right spot. So let me take a look at my notebook and tell you guys what I did frequency-wise here, in case any of you out there want to follow me in this in this adventure. Gene wrote to me and said that I should try to put my the oscillator of this contraption on 101.38700 hertz. I say again, 101.38700. I think the idea is that with the 1,500 hertz tone coming out of the Whisper software, that would put your upper sideband signal smack in the middle of the Whisper band on 30 meters. The Whisper band, not to be confused with the visual MEPT QRSS band, and that's another point of friction between the two communities. The Whisper band is above the MEPT QRSS band and goes from 101.40100 all the way up to 101.40300. The frequency selection that I just described put my upper sideband signal right in the middle of that band at 101.40200, and the lower sideband is way down below, about 3 kcs down below, right? Anyway, that was the plan. I got everything going, and then I remembered that somebody told me that you really had to make sure that your computer clock is synchronized pretty accurately. Now, this at first sounds pretty intimidating, especially if you're running an old clunky computer like I am. But I found out it was really very easy. The Whisper software displays the clock, the computer clock time, and it gives you, using your mouse, the ability to kind of to tweak it a bit. You can move it up and down, I guess, 15, 20 seconds or so. So all I did was I opened up the Whisper program, and I had my computer clock displayed, and then I opened up on the same screen the WWB or National Bureau of Standards time display from the States. You could do it from any of them, and the European sources for this also. And I noticed that my computer clock was 40 or 50 seconds off, which will put you out of business in the Whisper world. So I just tweaked it until I was time synchronized. And then it was really great, because then, I mean, within minutes, I could see my signal being picked up all over Northern Europe and into the UK. Really, really great stuff. Very, very gratifying. I had done the kind of the hardware work before we left for Sicily. And when we got back, on my first day back, I did the software portion of it, got that all running. And then it's a lot of fun. You sit there and you can see your reports coming in. I'm putting out, I think now, about 18 milliwatts, which, again, I think makes me the lowest powered Whisper station in the world. I mean, actually, power output would be about 36 milliwatts, but that's double sideband. And when I talk about how much RF I'm putting into the Whisper passband there, it's about half of that, I think, about 18 milliwatts. And I come into the shack. This is what I wanted to do. What got me into this whole thing was Mark K6HX, in his descriptions of and his presentations on his blog, on his Brainwagon blog, his description of walking into the shack in the morning and seeing that Google map with all these arrows and lines shooting off to, China and New Zealand and Australia and all these great interesting places. I wanted something similar, and I'm getting it. I'm not crossing any ponds yet, but but it's really interesting. The one of the first, I guess, bits of kind of interesting DX that I got was a few days ago. I walked in the shack and there was a line shooting up off the European continent out to OY3JE, Oscar Yankee 3 Juliet Echo, and that's the Faroe Islands. And wow, that was kind of an exotic. As I put it on the blog, I crossed a little bit of the blog, a little bit of the pond, and I went and looked and saw who that was, and I put some pictures of his station up on the blog. You could check that out. Very interesting location. And then yesterday morning, I walked in and I saw a little line shooting off to the southwest, leading to Echo Alpha 8 Alpha Yankee. Luis, and Luis has a really good website up, all kinds of great information about Whisper, and beautiful pictures of his very, very beautiful location. I joke that you should be careful about visiting Luis's site, because he's living in a beautiful place, and he is the owner of an Argonaut 509. It's almost unfair, but it was great fun to see. To find the websites of these stations that had picked up my little 18 milliwatt signal. Really interesting technical aspects of on Whisper, and the information that's displayed on the this global website, it's really fascinating. For example, they give you they display the signal to noise ratio at the receive stations. Now, I looked at the kind of the README files for Whisper put out by John Taylor, very interesting stuff, and they say that that Whisper can normally detect signals down to about 27 dBs below the noise. Think about that, guys. We're 27 dB below the noise. The way they calculate noise is, I think they look at they're looking at the noise in a standard 2500 hertz SSB audio channel. I notice that sometimes the SIG stations are reporting that I'm even weaker than that, down to 29 or 30 dB below the noise. Very impressive stuff. This is one of the reasons that I'm not worried about QRM being caused by my lower sideband, unless somebody in the area that where my lower sideband falls is using similar software. I would be completely inaudible. I would be just down, way down deep in the noise, 25 or 30 dB below the noise. So I'm not worried about causing QRM down there at the in the lower sideband frequency range. So really interesting stuff. Please, the map is a really interesting display too. I like to take a look at the map display. It's all the website for the reporting system is really very well done, and provides a lot of information. You could look at the whole world and look at all the stations in the world right now that are being picked up by Whisper stations, and it gives you a good sense of what's happening propagation wise around the world. So Whisper, I'm telling you guys, give it a shot. It's easy to do. It kind of gets you a little bit of involvement with the software-defined radio world, and at the same time allows you to keep using real simple, discrete component QRP hardware. So it's kind of a nice mixture of both worlds, and I'll eventually go back, I think, from time to time to the visual modes, but for now, Whisper is really very intriguing, and I strongly recommend it. So give it a shot. I've got a lot of information about it up on the blog, including pictures of EA8AY and OY3JE stations and QTHs, and I'm going to try to get a picture up later today of my very junk box oriented, really ugly Whisper transmitter. I think you guys get a kick out of that. All right, let's see. A couple other things came in that I wanted to mention. Related to this, you know, right around the time that I was installing the SBL1 mixer, diode ring mixer in the transmitter, by my pure serendipity, Jupe, Papa Echo 1, Charlie Quebec Papa, nice call, PE1CQP, had been listening to some of the back issues of Solder Smoke and was listening to the, I think it was around Solder Smoke 75, 76, where we were talking about mixers and how mixers work, and diode ring mixers in particular. You know, to understand how mixers work, it's not easy. There's some really sophisticated things going on there, and there's a lot of different ways to look at it. And understanding, really understanding how mixers function, for me, has been a bit of a struggle. I think I'm getting there. I'm not completely there yet, but I think I'm getting there. Anyway, Jupe has sent in some really helpful and interesting info on how this particular circuit, the diode ring mixer, how that works, and that's really interesting. And we've been exchanging emails all week, kind of thinking it through and comparing notes and sending each other diagrams. Jupe has made some really innovative use of LT Spice in trying to get an understanding of how this particular circuit that's used so frequently in ham radio actually functions. And I think it's interesting because it's kind of a, you know, there's nothing fundamentally different about the diode ring mixer. It's, you know, it like all mixers, it relies on non-linearity and combining two signals in a non-linear circuit to produce, you know, via Fourier and trigonometry, the sum and difference frequencies. It's a little bit different though because it's what they call commutating or reverse or polarity reversing, and that's kind of an interesting feature that that Jupe, the emails with Jupe kind of reminded me of or alerted me to, that that when that local oscillator signal goes negative, the input signal is multiplied. Not by zero, not by one, but by negative one. So it introduces a kind of an additional, I guess, extreme element of non-linearity in there. But interesting. I posted on the blog a diagram that I thought was really good from the RSGB Radio Communications Manual. I really like this manual. I mean, not to take anything away from the ARRL handbook, but the RSGB radio communication handbook is I think a really nice addition to any ham radio bookshelf. Pat Hawker, G3VA, wrote the intro to this handbook, and just give me a second here. I'm going to get it. I want to read this to you. I took this book with me to Sicily, and one morning I got up and I just was reading from it, as you do with a book. let's see. He said something here that caught my attention. I think there was some real wisdom in here. He wrote the preface to this book. It says here, "In recent years, amateur radio has developed in Europe along rather different lines from North America, with perhaps a little more interest in why as well as how. This ensures that this handbook is not just a British version of the popular American handbooks, although we owe a real debt to those in North America who originally conceived and pioneered technical handbooks of a style very different from the traditional engineering textbooks." I thought that was a really interesting paragraph, that Pat noted that this book contains perhaps a little more interest in why as well as how. And I guess that's one of the things that I've always kind of found a little bit lacking in the North American publications, where the handbook was very much more of a practical thing, much more oriented in just getting you information on how to do things without much discussion of the why of the circuit works, why, what was really going on in the circuit. Anyway, you'll see what I mean if you take a look on the blog at the RSGB diagram on how the diode ring mixer circuit works. Now, there's a very similar diagram, and equally good, I think, in Experimental Methods for RF Design. But I do think that the RSGB handbook, Radio Communication Handbook, and I have the fifth edition here, is perhaps, as Pat put it, I mean, it's not an extreme thing, but perhaps they give a little bit more emphasis to understanding how and why, I guess, how circuits work and why they work. So three cheers for the RSGB and for Pat Hawker, G3VA. Thanks very much for that. Enjoyed the book. And like all these handbooks, it's a bit heavy, but it was worth it to carry it all the way to Sicily and back. And thanks. I asked a while back for somebody to send us information on the flea at MIT. And somebody did. Let me see. Hold on. I got it listed here. Nick. Not yet licensed, but sent us some pictures of the flea at MIT, and I'll post the links to those pictures up on the blog page at soldersmoke.blogspot.com, so you guys can take a kind of a virtual tour of the flea at MIT. The other thing I've done on the blog page, I've been working on this on and off a little bit. If you go on the blog page, if you go down to the lower left-hand side of the page, you'll see kind of an index. We've got a lot of blog entries on there. I try to do one every day or every other day, and there's a lot of information piling up there. So it's important to have a good index so you can search through for topics that you're interested in, filter out the stuff that you're not. So we have the index there. If you go down to the lower left, you'll see it. I hope you find it useful. I hope it makes your use of the blog easier. Guys, you know, there's something we have to talk about, and it's every year around this time we come to this kind of difficult moment where we have to come to terms with our own kind of, gullibility, we're in the month of April, and every year April begins with, of course, April 1st. And, you know, this is an old ham radio tradition. It goes back. QST was involved in it for many years. They've pulled off some really, really good April 1st stories. And I always thought that we at Solder Smoke should continue in this fine tradition, and we have. This year, we carried a story that some of you apparently found believable about a new brand of cologne that's come out. You know, this whole effort was inspired by the discussion that we had with Steve out in California about the different varieties of the different flavors of solder smoke. I mean, we originally thought that there was solder smoke, but Steve Snort Rosin out there in California has alerted us to the fact that that there are a variety of different aromas available. I mean, and there are people out there, maybe one of them, maybe just Steve himself, but who have become sort of connoisseurs of different flavors of solder smoke. And, you know, there are people who prefer the standard 60-40 rosin, and there's been some discussion of smells that were inserted in the rosin by companies like Heathkit. Anyway, all of this got us thinking, and this was the inspiration for this year's 1 April story about the solder smoke cologne. You know, from the Men at Work collection. Anyway, we mentioned this two episodes ago, and we put a picture of a cologne bottle up on the blog page. And we included, because it's always important in these stories to get a way of determining how many people bought this thing. We put a web page link on the blog page, and if you clicked on that thing, the promise was that you could get more information about this exciting new product. And well, guys, I got to tell you, a considerable number of you clicked on that link. Not a whole lot, not a lot. I mean, I checked this morning, and that web page, the web page that was purportedly selling the Solder Smoke cologne from the Men at Work collection, only 134 visits. That's not bad. Not bad. I mean, we've got, I guess, maybe 100 of you, maybe 34 or so. You were just sort of looking at it for grins, but at least I guess about 100 of our listeners decided that they needed to investigate this. We have, I guess, about 2,500, 3,000 listeners for each podcast. So anyway, you guys did fairly well this year. Some of our previous April 1st stories provoked much higher levels of gullibility. I think one of the favorite, one of the biggest hits was the story of a couple of years back about how New Jersey had banned the use of soldering irons in the home. That provoked a real firestorm of reaction and many angry letters to the New Jersey State Legislature. Only 134 of you thought that Solder Smoke cologne would be an interesting product. I got some emails from some guys who, one fellow, I think some of us, you know, who are still single and are still kind of in the dating game, one fellow noted that he did not think that that a cologne favored, you know, a cologne with the Solder Smoke scent would exactly be what they call a chick magnet. It just wouldn't be good. So this is probably an idea that should be just kept to the April 1st story section. Not an actual. We're not recommending this for actual use. It could have a devastating impact on your social life. So anyway, thanks to all of you who clicked on the page for the cologne, and you know, we look forward to seeing you again next year at around this time. Thanks very much. All right, let's see, what else is going on? Ah, I wanted to mention to you something that's kind of looming on the horizon. I mentioned this a while back, that I was putting together a book, and it's coming together. George K8VU has very kindly volunteered to serve as a kind of as an editor for the book, and has gone through it with me and has spotted many of my errors. I'm going to do this book. I'm going to publish it via a system called Lulu. Great website. You can publish it yourself. This is not the kind of book I don't think will be a real commercial success. We're completely out of the April 1st period now, guys, so this is for real. But the book's called Solder Smoke, A Global Adventure in Radio Electronics, A Technical Memoir, Confessions of a Radical Fundamentalist Electronic Home Brewer, From Crystal Radios to Podcast MP3s with Occasional Forays into Astronomy, Kite Aerial Photography, and Model Rocketry. I'll tell you a little bit about it. It should be out, I don't know, in the next few months. It should be out in time for the summer, so you could take it to the beach with you. Solder Smoke is a story of a secret after-hours life in electronics. Bill Maris started out as a fairly normal kid from a fairly normal suburban American town. But around the age of 12, he got interested in electronics and has never been the same. To make matters worse, when he got older, he became a diplomat. His work has taken him to Panama, Honduras, El Salvador, the Spanish Basque Country, the Dominican Republic, and the Azores Islands of Portugal, London, and most recently Rome. In almost all of these places, his addiction to electronics caused him to seek out like-minded radio fiends. to stay up late into the night working on strange projects, and to build embarrassingly large antennas above innocent foreign neighborhoods. Solder Smoke takes you into the basement workshops and electronics parts stores of these exotic foreign places and lets you experience the life of an expatriate geek. If you are looking for restaurant or hotel recommendations, look elsewhere. But if you need to know where to get an RF choke rewound in Santo Domingo, Solder Smoke is the book for you. Solder Smoke is no ordinary memoir. It is a technical memoir. Each chapter contains descriptions of Bill's struggles to understand, and I mean really understand, radio electronics theory. Why does P equal I times E? Do holes really flow through transistors? What is a radio wave? How does a frequency mixer produce some and different frequencies? If these are the kinds of questions that keep you up at night, this book is for you. Finally, Solder Smoke is about brotherhood, international cross-border brotherhood. Through the Solder Smoke podcast, we have discovered that all around the world, in countries as different as Sudan and Switzerland, there are geeks just like us, guys with essentially the same story, guys who got interested in radio and electronics as teenagers and who have stuck with it ever since. Our geeky addiction gives us something in common, something that transcends national differences, and our electronics gives us the means to communicate. Solder Smoke is about what we call the International Brotherhood of Electronic Wizards. All right. Soon at a website near you. I hope you guys like it. As long as I'm in the advertising mode, and I am, I had mentioned to you guys that we're joined now by the lovely and talented Maria Patricia. Say good morning.
Good morning.
All right. I had mentioned to you guys that I wanted to bring advertising into Solder Smoke, and I know this provoked some, anxiety among the listeners. I think there were guys who feared that I'd be selling Cheetos or something here or on the show. That's not the case. What is that noise? Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's... All right. All right. Okay, anyway, I want to share with you our first commercial announcement. But this is the kind of announcement that we want, the kind of advertising that we want here on the show, because it's consistent with what we do. It supports a fellow radio amateur who is striking out and trying to create a new enterprise to benefit the ham radio community. And it's the kind of thing that we'd be talking about anyway. But I have to tell you that this is... Oh, really? Oh, Maria. Maria's got a bit of a tummy ache here. All right. Well, anyway, let me tell you about this. I got a message recently from... Let me get the name. I got all my notes here, but Maria's arrival has kind of discombobulated me a bit. Here we go. Let's see. Got a great message, and this message arrived while we were in Sicily from Nick, VK1 Alpha Alpha. He tells a story here that I think you'll all be interested in. Nick writes, I'm a watchmaker by trade, but for the past 10 years, my business is mostly sale of vintage watches. Thanks to the internet, business took off really well, but the downside is that I rarely have any free time for ham radio. Occasionally, I would go to places for a bit of DXing. I went to a few VK9s, H44, H40, and some IOTAs. A few days per year for ham radio was all I could find time for. Anyway, around Christmas of last year, I got a few days off and decided to build a kit transceiver. I'd heard about Elecraft, so I went to their website and ordered a K2. Wow, that was a true eye-opener. Not only did I get it up and running at the first go, but I was truly amazed with the quality of the PCB and components. In my excitement, I sent an email to a bunch of my ham friends. Their response was a bit lukewarm. Apparently, I didn't know that the K2 had been around for a while. One friend suggested that if I want to be on the cutting edge, I should try to make my own rig. I thought that was a joke, but for some reason, the more I thought about it, about building my own stuff, the more sense it made. So I decided to build something very simple and something I may one day need, a high-voltage power supply. I emailed back my friend and asked him how one makes PCBs, and he explained that there is a software for that purpose. Naturally, I wanted my PCBs to look as good as Elecraft's, so I contacted a PCB manufacturer. He said, no problem, but I would need a minimal quantity of 100 boards. Guys, that's the key fact right there, and that led to the creation, to the genesis of Genesis Radio. I quickly figured out that if I sell 99 pieces, I could probably end up with enough profit to cover the cost of one PCB and the cost of tooling, postage, etc. It's not really a smart business plan to invest $900 and make a $10 profit, but I couldn't care less. I somehow knew there has to be at least 99 people out there who would buy my power supply PCB if the price was low enough. To cut a long story short, this was a very steep learning curve. I told my friends about my project, and once again, they basically told me that I was wasting my time. If I have a desire to put together a production, I would have to find something that would be much more cutting edge than power supply. Well, January 15th, I got in touch with TASA, Yankee Uniform 1 Lima Mike. TASA is a brilliant electronic engineer and a well-respected software-defined radio guru in Europe. I told him about my desire to put together a small and simple kit just for fun. The next day, I got an email from him. He said, if you want to do it, go straight into something more complex. And there was a list of materials, for his 40-meter SDR transceiver, all-mode 5 watts. The list contained over 380 parts, and quite frankly, I had very little idea what the parts were supposed to do, let alone where I can buy them in quantity. On January 20th, 2009, I sent out 600 emails to manufacturers and wholesalers from all over the world. I spent over 80 hours comparing prices, quantities, delivery conditions, etc. Finally, I had a list of 11 suppliers, the smallest one being Surplus of Nebraska, providing one ferrite bead, to the largest manufacturer in Taiwan, supplying most of the passive components. On March 1st of this year, I had all but one part in stock, total of 40,000 pieces, enough for 100 kit sets. In the meantime, I registered my business name, and on March 15th, I finally had my hands on a working prototype of the Genesis G40 SDR transceiver. All along, I had the best time of my life. Despite spending 18 hours a day on this project, I spent 2 weeks ordering 40,000 components, sorting them out in bags, translating Yankee Uniform 1 Lima Mike's manual, and taking hundreds of photographs would help the eventual buyer. On March 31st, I got an email from PayPal. You've got a payment. I sold my first kit to VK3 AMW. Shortly after, I got a bit of publicity, and the first orders were in from Russia, Slovenia, the U.S., Spain, and Holland. The G40 suddenly became the hot new SDR radio kit. The floodgate was opened on April 8th when W1RFI, Ed Hare, in the ARRL lab posted this unsolicited comment on QRZ.com. The purpose of these sorts of kits is to be a platform from which amateurs can do experimentation on software-defined radio. With SDR, experimentation consists of writing better software for modulation and demodulation of signals. One can do this with multi-thousand dollar radios or spend as little as $40 for a Softwalk SDR. I looked at all the schematics for this one, Genesis G40, and was quite impressed at what they were able to do for an affordable price. On paper, it looks like a very good balance between cost, complexity, and simplicity. Anyway, that's the story of the Genesis kit. I think it's really interesting. I wish Nick a lot of luck, and I'm happy to help him out and get the word out about his kits. I'm gonna post all kinds of links about Genesis Radio. The website is www.genesisradio.com.au/G40. I'll put that up on the site. And I think you guys will find this very interesting. Let's see. What else? He asked me to mention that they have a plan to produce an instruction assembly pictorial, which is so detailed that even a 10-year-old kid would be able to assemble the G40. He says I could also mention that they hope to be able to simplify the holy grail of SDR, which is image rejection, with one trimmer adjustment and a few snapshots of SDR software. Even a total novice could get image rejection adjusted in no time. Here's something else that might grab attention. Their next project is a dual bander 30-meter, 20-meter, which will be sold for the price of a monobander, $149. They're able to do so by cutting down profits to just bare bones minimum. Anyway, there you go. I'm happy to help out Nick. I wish him a lot of luck. Please take a look at his site and give the Genesis Radio SDR rig consideration. Let's see. Those are my notes here. All right. That, gentlemen, brings us to
time for
Solder Smoke Mailbag.
I love them.
Indeed.
Indeed, Solder Smoke Mailbag. Got a real interesting email yesterday from Andrew, VK6JBL. Andrew is obviously an Australian, but he's living up in HB9 land. I think he's living in the Italian portion of Switzerland. He told me that he started listening to Solder Smoke a while back and used it while training for the Milan Marathon. I guess Solder Smoke's good for that. You could just load it into the podcast there and listen to me drone on as the miles go go away. With 106 episodes, there's a lot of droning on. Anyway, you could he used it for that. His wife's Italian, and that's what creates the Swiss Italian connection there. He heard me in one of my earlier episodes lament the fact that I lost my Orbitz 2 software. And he said that while back in VK6 land, he was rummaging around his junk boxes in his parents' house and found a copy of the Orbitz 2 and Orbitz 3 software. So he's going to provide that and send that to me. I was really delighted, and it's kind of a global story. You know, an Australian guy in Switzerland hears an American in Italy complain about the loss of a software program from the 1980s. He returns to VK6 land, finds a copy, and brings it back to Switzerland for eventual transmission to Italy. Yes. Thanks very much, Andrew, and I look forward to the arrival of Orbitz 2. A great program developed by a guy named Roy Welch. I used it a while back, and I want to now get it going again in my old Satellite Pro computer. Nick sends us the pictures from the flea at MIT. He also sent along something I thought was really interesting, and it's a website called Planet Stephanie. You know, I hope I'm not being sexist or discriminatory when I use phrases like you guys or the fraternity or the brotherhood and all that. But let's face it, 99% of our listeners are guys, but there are very talented female radio amateurs out there. And Stephanie, VA3UXB, is certainly one of them. She has a really interesting website that Nick alerted me to. Just if you Google VA3UXB or Planet Stephanie, Stephanie, you'll be brought to the site. Really innovative stuff, very interesting. I hope Stephanie is among our listeners. Jim, AL7RV, sends emails about his adventures in whispering. He is into the whisper mode, and quite successfully, I might add. He's also been bitten by the boat anchor bug, and this could be a serious malady, especially since he reveals that he's been thinking about R390s. Man, those are expensive boat anchors. Good luck with that, Jim. I hope you stay out of trouble. Mike, KC7IT, sent in an interesting story about ham radio operators saving a city from cyber attack. The city is Morgan Hill, California. If you Google that, I'm sure you'll find the article. Very interesting. Thanks for sending that along, Mike. Graham, ZL2GDN, sent me a good email on small distros, small versions of Linux software that might eventually work with my Satellite Pro PC. One of my problems with Linux, I mean, I love the whole concept, but, man, I'm telling you, there's a steep learning curve. And even when you find the software that you could use, figuring out how to download it, how to get it in the right form, how to get it on a disk, how to get it running in the machine, I'm telling you, for those of us who are not familiar with Unix or Linux, It's not easy. But thanks for sending that along, Graham, and I hope I eventually crack the code. Jerry, NR5A, has been out bike riding. Very good for you, Jerry. It looks very healthy, and that bike looks very fine business. I included it now. It's now part of the Solder Smoke slideshow. So one of the first few slides, you'll see Jerry zipping along South Dakota in a very fine business-looking tricycle. Congratulations, Jerry. Glad you're doing better. Jack ON9CSV sends us a video of the guy who built the amplifier based on plasma. And he notes that only appliance operators use things like store-bought tubes. Real hams use plasma amps. So fine business, Jack, and good to hear from you again. George KB3ODH sends along a very fine link to a Make magazine article on the lost art of homebrewing your own components. If you take a look at Make magazine and go for homebrew components, you'll find that very interesting. Got a great email from Eldon, WA0UWH. Eldon is the guy who came up with the water-powered mechanical QRSS transmitter. He told us that he's put that device on the shelf, but he's back to building 9-volt powered battery QRSS rigs. And I was blown away by the picture of Eldon's latest rig. It's built atop, or actually on the side, of one of the little square 9-volt batteries. It's a beautiful picture, wonderful concept, includes the keyer. You got to take a look at this. It's on the blog, soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Check it out. Really interesting stuff. Eldon on the cutting edge of QRSS. Nick G8INE reports that that he definitely has the knack, and he's building a DSB rig from Tim Walford's kits, from the Walford kits, which causes me to thank Tim for sending me the Spring 2009 issue 63 of Hot Iron. Lots of good information in there. Lots of great kits from Walford kits. And you can find all the details at Walford Electronics, www.walfordelectronics.co.uk. Check it out. Really interesting kits there, and I'm always pleased at how devoted to DSB Tim has always been. There aren't many of us out there, but Tim is definitely in definitely one of the big proponents of DSB for simple ham radio gear. David VK6DI, who's been our ears in Western Australia and VK6 land, has finally, sadly, packed up, pulled up stakes and packed up, and is heading back to the eastern portion of Australia. David VK6DI has provided really a great service for those of us in the QRSS MEPT game. I'm sad that my little signal has never made it all the way to VK6 land, but David, thanks for being the ears of the QRSS community in that very interesting and exotic part of the world for all these years. Good luck to you back east. Speaking of Australia, I want to give a shout-out, as they say in TV land, a shout-out to the Northwest Tasmania ATV Group. I understand that our show is rebroadcast on the VK6AX repeater. Thanks very much for the guys who are doing that. You know, Solder Smoke has some roots in Australia, because in Tasmania, because one of the early ideas for the show came from conversations that I used to have with my friend Ross, VK7VKK. And he and I used to talk, and we often talked about turning our conversations into a program that we would call the Dawn Patrol. And actually, the idea kind of turned into Mike and I, the idea that Mike and I had for Solder Smoke. But around the same time, I was talking to Ross. And anyway, a shout out to all the ATV guys there in Northwest Tasmania. Thanks for listening. Jonathan KB1KIX has a nice oscilloscope tutorial on his blog, www.kb1kix.net. Check it out. Very nice. A sincere thanks to George, N2APB, who sent me a really wonderful care package filled with literature and discs from the AM QRP Homebrewer magazine and the New Jersey QRP Club publication that preceded it. I had lost the disc with all of the back issues, and I asked George to send me along a disc. He sent along the disc and much more, many discs and many of the fine publications that came out from New Jersey QRP and AM QRP. And it's great stuff because I stick these things in my pocket and I go out and I read them. And in the April 2003 edition of the QRP Home Brewer, I was reading this in the Piazza yesterday. Really great articles and something I want to build. Build an active antenna, an article by Phil DeCare, AB7AEI. I read this article and I said, man, I got to build. That's one of those articles that you just have that kind of reaction. And then I also had with me the proceedings from AtlantaCon 2002, an article in here that I just found extremely useful, A Handyman's Guide to QRP Transmitters by Paul Harden, NA5N. Paul has made so many contributions to homebrewing and ham radio. And, man, I'm halfway through this article. I'm learning a lot. Thanks to both authors, and thanks again to George and to APB for sending that stuff along. Sean, KJ4KNW, sends me links with plans for the construction of a homebrew studio condenser mic. Yeah, I could, you know, we all know I could use it. I hope to get around to that. Thanks for those plans there, Sean. Stephen, NM7H, also known as Hotel Sierra Zero Zulu Hotel Bravo, said he was quite surprised to see that my reports about the solder smoke being sold in Jimbo's bar in Thailand were posted on the net. Don't worry, Stephen, I did some editing to keep you out of trouble. You'll know what I'm talking about. Enough said on that, but I was happy to put it up on the blog. Stephen reports that he's setting up space in his shack for his Drake 2NT and Drake 2B. Fine business, Stephen. I know you'll enjoy those rigs. Good luck with that. Finally, Nigel, our man in Dover, who we had on Solder Smoke a couple of issues back, got a lot of good feedback on that. People really liked hearing about Nigel's two clubs on two sides of the English Channel. Nigel sent along some photos of the French radio club. I'll post them on the blog as soon as I can. And Nigel, please send us along pictures of the British club. We want to hear about the English club where you guys actually build things. And that really got a lot of attention. A lot of guys sent me messages saying, man, I wish I could be in a club like that, as we all do. All right, guys, that we're at the one-hour mark here, a little bit over. Thanks very much for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed this issue of Solder Smoke. Good luck with all your projects. Hope the spring is beginning for those of you who are in the Northern Hemisphere, and I hope those of you in the South, hope the winter is kind to you. 7-3 from Rome.